and welcome to X-Men Unraveled. I'm your host, Noelle, and in this podcast, I follow the stories of the X-Men in chronological order. Last week, I covered the early life of Scott Summers and how he ended up as Charles Xavier's first recruit to the team. Today, I'm going to continue with the second member of the X-Men, Iceman. First, I have to give a couple of quick updates because I got to spend some time on two awesome podcasts. If you are a fan of the X-Men cartoon, I was on a recent episode of Talkin' Snicked covering Season 2, Episode 3, Whatever It Takes. It's a really Storm-centric episode, so you know I had to be there for that. And there's also a really fun plotline about Wolverine, and he gets some pretty good cameos in his parts as well. So go check that episode out, as well as the rest of the show. I was on there a minute ago, so go listen to the others. The host, Ryan, is super knowledgeable about the X-Men, and it's been so fun listening to the episodes about the show. Again, that is Talkin' Snicked, so go listen if you aren't already. I also got to join a great conversation on Grey Malkin Lane about female superheroes and being a woman who likes comics. There was a stellar roster of guests, including Alicia from the X-Wife podcast, author Carrie Harris, and Professor Jessica Baldanzi. If you're wondering what I was doing there with such an awesome group, me too. But it was so fun, and props to host Chad for putting it together. And I was on another recent episode of Grey Malkin Lane covering X-Men number 34. And this episode, of course, had some great guests, Connor Goldsmith of Cerebrocast and Marvel writer Steve Orlando. He's writing for the Marauders series, and Marauders Annual number 1 recently came out, so we got to talk about that a little bit too. It was a great time, and I love the Marauders, so I'm really excited to see where it's going to go down the road. So go give that a listen and check out the rest of the pod for fun conversations about the 60s comics. And again, that is Grey Malkin Lane. On to today's topic, Robert Drake, better known as Bobby or Iceman. I'm, of course, covering his early life, but there's not as many points to cover as with Scott Summers, probably for the best given how poorly Scott's young life went. So after I get through his recruitment, I'll actually be jumping ahead to later developments about his character that are very important to who he is and to keep in mind reading his stories going forward. Because in 2015, it was confirmed that Bobby is gay and had spent his life up until that point in the closet. So it adds a layer of complexity to his character that will add to understanding him as a person as we go through his stories in chronological order. So I felt like it was important to cover today as well. So let's get into who Iceman is. Robert, or Bobby Drake, first appeared in Uncanny X-Men number 1 alongside the rest of the original team, of course being created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. He is the youngest member of the team, and in early issues, he's definitely working hard to prove himself to everyone else. I'm going to start with a combination of the stories from Uncanny X-Men numbers 44 to 46 and X-Men Origins Iceman. As a child, Bobby lived in Long Island, New York, with his parents William and Madeline. When Bobby's 12, he accidentally freezes the family pool while he's swimming, and he doesn't know what happened. His parents try to comfort him, and they tell him that they've seen news stories that there are people with powers. And so they tell him that he's a mutant, and he's going to have to be careful. At this time, Bobby's parents seem pretty accepting of learning that Bobby's a mutant, but later it's going to become a source of conflict between parents and son. But in this story, they act pretty decently. After learning of his powers to create and control ice, Bobby starts practicing them in his free time, usually at night. He'll go off alone into, I don't know if it's a backyard, it looks kind of foresty, and he practices using his new powers. But this is an X-Men story, so things don't stay simple for Bobby for very long. Because at the same time, Bobby is dating a girl named Judy from school, and one night they're on their way home from the movies, and a group of boys ambush them. The leader of this little gang, his name is Rocky, and he's jealous that Bobby is with Judy, and the group definitely seems drunk. So they grab Judy and then start beating up Bobby. And Bobby obviously can't fight the whole group at once, so he has to use his powers. He covers most of the boys' hands in ice so they can't move and hit him, and then he encases Rocky in a solid block of ice. But Judy does not react well. Despite having been rescued from a group of drunk teenage boys, Judy's main concern is learning that Bobby is a mutant. She's upset at what he's done and seeing his powers, so she breaks up with him on the spot and runs away. Bobby is distraught. He doesn't know what to do because now he really can't keep his powers a secret. So he runs home and tells his parents what happened. They want to keep him safe, and so they tell him to go upstairs and pack. But as he's gathering things together and putting them in a suitcase, the cops show up. They arrest Bobby and take him to jail. I don't know what exactly they arrested him for. It was self-defense. I guess they're probably just arresting him for being a mutant. So Bobby is sitting in a jail cell alone, wondering what is going to happen to him, and a mob starts gathering outside, just begging to be let in to deal with the mutant. They are saying that he's dangerous and they want to kill him. It's basically a lynch mob. But as Bobby is sitting in jail, a giant hole is blasted open in the cell wall and Cyclops comes barging in. Professor Xavier also learned about the incident and saw a chance to recruit a new mutant to his team. But Scott Summers, who was also recently a lost, confused young mutant on his own, doesn't handle the situation with very much tact. He breaks in and announces to Bobby that he needs to come with him. No further explanation. He's also in uniform, so there he is in his yellow and blue skin-tight suit with his visor on, standing in the rubble that's left after his break-in. And Bobby's reaction is not surprising or hard to guess. He's like, I have no idea who you are or where you want me to go, and he basically tells Scott to fuck off. And Bobby's very concerned about having his day in court and being cleared of his crimes. But Scott doesn't back down and basically says, fine, if you're not willing to come with me, I'll take you by force. And I just feel like maybe Xavier skipped a lesson in how to manage a delicate situation like this, and Scott's natural demeanor is not quite suited to it. So Scott blasts another hole in the cell wall and literally drags Bobby out. Not thrilled with this whole turn of events, Bobby uses his powers to cover himself in ice and attack Cyclops. Cyclops, with zero de-escalation skills, fights back and then has the audacity to tell Bobby that he's sorry to fight him, but, quote, it's for your own good, and that Bobby should listen to reason. It's like, Scott, you were sent to help a scared kid sitting in jail, and you managed to start a fight instead. Not exactly reasonable yourself, bud. Bobby is able to fight Cyclops off and escape, so he runs away to a pier and jumps in a boat. Scott is close behind, but their fight has caught the attention of the angry human mob. And so the mob chases after both of them and gets to the pier as well. And then Scott has to use his optic blast on the wooden pier in front of the people, and the mob falls into the water. Then Scott jumps into the boat from a bridge to catch Bobby, and the two just keep on fighting and eventually end up back on land. And the comic says that they continued fighting for a solid 10 minutes. Both of them are exhausted and have reached the limits of their powers. And to make things worse, just when they feel like they both can't go on anymore, a human runs up behind Bobby and points a shotgun at his head. Bobby and Scott have no choice but to surrender as more humans arrive and surround them with guns, and the humans tell them that they're going to string them up. So the two boys are unable to use their powers, and a lynch mob has them captured. Things come to a brief halt when the sheriff comes running up, waving his own shotgun, and he tells the men to stop what they're doing. But his interruption doesn't last long, though, because the men go after him and drag him away so they can continue their murderous rampage. They tie Scott and Bobby up and drag them through the streets to a tree with a noose hanging on it. It's pretty fucking dark. The men then walk Bobby over to the tree and they put the noose around his neck. And just at that moment, Scott gets a telepathic message from Professor Xavier, ordering Scott to get both of them free and get to Bobby's house. You would imagine that if Xavier can reach Scott, he might be able to help get the mob under control, but that's all the help Xavier gives at this point. By this time, Scott's powers have recharged and he's able to take on the mob. He breaks Bobby free from the man with the noose and tells Bobby to run home. But the mob also figures out pretty easily where they're going because they know who Bobby is after his arrest. But once the mob gets close enough to Drake's house, Xavier finally does something and wipes the mob's memories so they disperse and are no longer a problem. At the house, Professor Xavier is with Bobby's parents. He informs Bobby that his parents have consented for him to join Xavier's school, where he will improve his powers and help in the fight against evil. And that's enough for Bobby to sign on without any further questions, but he does ask, "What about my parents?" Xavier tells him that he's going to wipe their memories of Bobby's powers, and they will only know that he's a student at Xavier's school. Which seems pretty shitty. Bobby's parents didn't reject him for being a mutant at this time. They actually did their best to protect him from the types of attacks the humans carried out. So now, 16-year-old Bobby has to keep this enormous secret from his parents, and it really makes me wonder if Xavier telepathically forced the Drakes to accept the offer of Bobby attending his school. I wouldn't personally put it past him. We do learn in later stories that Bobby's father is a pretty big douche a lot of the time, and maybe it ends up being a good thing for Bobby to get away, but it still seems like a lot for a 16-year-old. In X-Men Origins Iceman, Xavier says, "Sometimes it's best that mutants' loved ones don't know who they are." But I don't really know what experience Xavier has to back this up, at this point at least. I feel like it's just an opinion and he's forcing it on Bobby. But Bobby returns to Xavier's mansion along with Cyclops, and that is how Bobby Drake joins the X-Men, with his life suddenly and violently upended and his parents now unaware of who he really is. Personally, I don't feel like it's a great start. Charles Xavier's motives in starting the X-Men might have been good, but he definitely doesn't seem like someone equipped to work with vulnerable children. I mean, Scott may have had nowhere else to go, but Charles really contributes to Bobby's displacement, and I don't know, it just seems like everything in the story went wrong, or at least was done in the worst possible way. Because sending Scott in the first place to go recruit Bobby from jail, Scott didn't have the people skills to convince Bobby to join, and that seems like that started everything off on the wrong foot, almost gets the boys lynched. I don't know, seems like there were better ways to handle this entire situation. Anyway, that is how Iceman becomes the second member of the team, and he and Cyclops go on to carry out more recruiting for the group. But I want to get to the other important part of Bobby's life later on. Retcons are interesting. On one hand, it's altering a character's story after they've been around for a while, around 50 years in Bobby Drake's case, but they not only change the character going forward, they also affect how you read their life and actions in the past. We saw this last time with Scott, one of my least favorite mutants, when we learn about the part of his life where Mr. Sinister tortures him, which adds a new layer to consider in his behaviors and choices once we learn about it. But with Bobby Drake, there is an incredibly important retcon that isn't about what happened to him, it was a revelation about who he is. In All New X-Men number 40, published in April of 2015, it was revealed that Bobby Drake is gay. The storyline where this took place is a little complicated, so stay with me. I'm just going to cover the basics because we'll get into it and go over it in more detail later on, but it's the X-Men, so you can't be too surprised when it involves time travel. So when the original X-Men are still young students at Xavier's school, they are brought to their future by Beast, who thought that they could help fix things. He shows up in a specific scene of Uncanny X-Men number 8, and the mutants are plucked from their timeline and brought to the future. But it's not a quick trip through time and back. They end up staying for quite a while and get involved in all sorts of X-Men adventures. Jean Grey ends up being the catalyst for an important part of Bobby's story as they're time displaced. So the young Jean Grey, at the time that she's brought to the future, is not aware that she's a telepath. Thanks to Professor Xavier's habit of making important decisions for other people without their knowledge. But when she's in the future, she learns about the full extent of her powers, and she goes ahead and rummages around in young Bobby Drake's mind. She then confronts him one day and asks him why he made a comment about magic being hot. And he's like, because she is. But Jean doesn't drop it. She basically says, it's just weird because you're gay. And Bobby is not happy with her for either reading his mind or trying to force him into admitting something he didn't feel ready to. Whatever Jean's intentions are, it's a pretty shitty move. She doesn't just talk to him, she actively pushes him into an admission. And she continues this even after he literally builds a wall of ice between them, just to reinforce the fact that this is not a conversation that he wanted to be having, and it may not be one he wanted to have with Jean in particular in the first place. So Jean uses her powers to intrude into Bobby's mind and then makes a decision about what's right for Bobby. She has learned well from Professor Xavier. As far as Jean's actions go, what's done is done, and now Bobby starts trying to understand the dichotomy between what he knows about himself and what he sees in his older self's life, because being brought to the future, he meets the older version of Bobby Drake. And he has seen that the Bobby he's met in the future is living life as a straight man and has had several well-known relationships with women, so he decides to talk to his older self about it. In Uncanny X-Men number 600, young Bobby takes Jean and goes to speak to older Bobby. That is how I'm going to differentiate them. It's the best I can do. So young Bobby kind of corners older Bobby and says they need to talk. And so young Bobby tells his older self that he's gay, as it turns out, and says that that means that older him should be gay too, right? And so older Iceman then gets one of the best lines ever and says, "This is why nobody likes you, Jean Grey." Love it. Just the best line. I couldn't get over it. I reread it probably 10 times. But that's about all that's funny in this whole episode, because young Bobby then tells older Bobby that he doesn't want to live his life hiding who he is, and he's wondering why older him is still hiding this fact. And older Bobby tells him that he put everything he was into being an X-Man, and he just wanted one part of his life to be something he wasn't persecuted for, and he pushed it down day after day and just kept on living that way. And at this point, Jean unhelpfully jumps in and says, oh, it's okay, because some people don't come out till they're like 80, as if that's supposed to make anyone feel better. And then having learned absolutely nothing this day, she goes ahead and reads older Bobby's mind too. And she just shares those thoughts with younger Bobby that his future self wonders what it would be like to make himself happy and whole for once in his life. Then the story devolves into an attempt at humor, and younger Bobby asks if older Bobby thinks Angel is hot, and he laughs and says, oh god, yes. Which is funny, but I don't like how it wraps up this story. Because then older Bobby wants to give Jean a hug, which I just feel like stating she does not deserve at all. She did not deserve that in this story. The Bobbies should have kicked her out and had their own conversation, but we don't get that. Anyway, eventually the young X-Men are returned to their own time with their memories wiped. So Bobby loses all of this experience when he's sent back. And I saw quite a few articles saying Bobby was put back in the closet, and it really does feel cruel to take all of that away from him. In a way, I guess we just have to look at it as a pitfall of time travel storytelling, because how can Bobby live the life that we know from the comics once he's had these experiences when he's in issue 8 of Uncanny X-Men? But still, it was young Bobby who said he didn't want to live his life hiding who he was, and that's exactly what he gets sent back to. I'll pick up the details of this storyline when we get to the time displacement later on, but since I've jumped ahead chronologically, I want to briefly mention the impact this whole episode has in adult Bobby's life. After his conversation with his younger self, Bobby starts working through his own coming out. In Iceman number 1 from 2017, we see him making an online dating profile, and he starts coming out to his friends and some exes in the X-Men. Some of them already know from having seen the time-displaced Bobby start a relationship with an inhuman named Romeo. And then there's his parents, who do not make things easier, and he has to deal with them when he tells them that he's gay. So there's quite a bit for him to sort through as he tries to navigate his own emotions and identity. But Bobby is able to start living who he is for the first time. This does not, in my opinion, justify Jean's shitty behavior. But I am going to leave things there for today because I don't want to jump too far ahead. But I did feel like this part of Bobby's life is helpful in reading his stories going forward. He may not remember the experiences of his time displacement, but it still gives us some more insight into who he is as we go through the stories from here. I hope that this look at Bobby's early life and later years together was helpful. He's obviously an integral part of the team over the decades, and his early time as a member of the X-Men is an important period of growth in both his powers and literally growing up. Next episode, we'll get back to Bobby's life along with Scott and their part in gaining another recruit for the team, Warren Worthington III, the Mutant Angel. In the meantime, check out the podcast Instagram at X-Men Unraveled and my Twitter at L Unraveled, that's E-L-L-E Unraveled, for updates and posts from the comics. Thank you for listening as always, and remember not to be like Jean Grey. Bye.